You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 147, and I'm a little scratchy because I'm losing my voice.
Yes, episode 147 of the Family Gamers Podcast, sponsored by sickness.
Yay!
Not really.
And allergies. On top of each other.
Hey everybody, I'm your host Andrew, and I'm joined as always by my lovely and wonderful, and as previously mentioned, sick wife Anitra.
That's me!
And it is an odd-numbered podcast, so we have a guest this week. We're happy to welcome on the show Isaac Villa. How you doing today, sir?
I am good, sir. How are you?
I am great. It is beautiful outside. I got to do some work on the car. We're in a happy place. It's good stuff.
It is. It's good Midwest weather out there.
So we're having Isaac on the show because Isaac runs a site similar to ours, but a little bit different, called Gaming with Sidekicks.
I do indeed. Yes, sir.
So, Isaac, we basically ran into each other in the press room at PAX Unplugged last year, and we've been talking about getting on each other's shows for a while now,
a couple of months at least.
And so your show is on hiatus right now, but it's the perfect opportunity for you to come on ours.
Yeah, we're in between seasons, as it were, right?
Right. Yes, we had some pre-show banter about how to qualify the hiatus. So talk a little bit about Gaming with Sidekicks and what you do and what the focus of the site is.
Sure. Our site kind of branched off from a previous site. We, along with myself and three other guys, met through the world of competitive Dice Masters. We played Dice Masters from its inception right up to its collapse of a CCG. It's now pretty much an LCG closed system, buy a box and get everything model. But we were playing this when it was at its height of its competitive nature, and we were covering it. We had a website, forums, we had four different active podcasts about Dice Masters, and just kind of really went down that rabbit hole. And one of the things I got from that going to Origins, playing competitively, was a huge group of friends who are all really at their core board gamers. And we still get together. Origins is kind of our big summer camp, as it were. There's about 50 of us that plan to play games and hang out. People stay together and, you know, kind of have really melded from that community. And off of that website, myself and my friends JT, Randy, and Stuart all started this site where we wanted to still do something out there in the board gaming world. And what we looked at was, what are we doing? Like, what kind of gaming are we doing? And all of us are dads with kids of various ages. My friend JT has three daughters, all under the age of 10. My friend Stuart has a just under 1-year-old and one on the way. I have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old. And my friend Randy has 6 going on 7 kids. He literally has a zoo in his home. And so we all looked at, like, who do we love to play with? And we kind of came up with this motto that I really like, just really straightforward with Game of Sidekicks. Our motto is games we like with the people we love. And we like games.
I love it.
We like games, we love people, right? And, you know, I'll give you an example. Tonight, we're going to have two people over that we attend church with. My son and their twin boys kind of get along and play, but we've kind of slowly been introducing them to games. And it's that, like, it's almost like dating somebody. Like, I don't want to, like, learn Orleans, my favorite game. Like, I'm like, have you played board games? Yeah, what do you like? This, and this. Okay, well, let's try. And, you know, we met with him a couple weeks ago, and we played some simple stuff. And then I kind of, like, dabbed with some a little harder stuff. I got Kung Fu Zoo on the table. I got, you know, Code Names and, what's the other, the yellow Code Names S game?
Decrypto?
Decrypto, which I love. Got that on the table. All of the games from Grandpa Beck's, like, those are always on the table for newbies. Skull King and cover your assets. And then like, and then at the end, I was like, hey, why don't you try this King of Tokyo game? Let's see what you do with a little bit more gaming game. And they liked it. So tonight, you know, I'm going to try some different stuff. I might try Dice Throne. I'm definitely going to get out Baron Park. I might bring Rec Raiders to the table and try that. So, you know, it's just that progression of like, okay, I love these people. Can I play some games and have some good social time? I love a good meaty 2-3 hour game. I really do. But that's not the majority of what we play, right? And that's like it's a family type gaming environment that I have, and that's what we wanted to focus on. So we look at our podcast and YouTube videos, kind of looking at some reviews for that, and primarily a lot of written blog reviews. And Randy and myself probably do quite a bit of our writing, JT and Stuart as well, but Randy's really taking a focus on Kickstarters. He really likes to look at companies that are just trying to like get themselves out there and help them along. I've kind of found a few companies that I really like and really enjoy interacting with and put some focus on them. And, you know, we have games that we like, we have games that we don't, and we call them out as we see them. So it's been fun to kind of see that progression. We've been doing this just barely a year, and, you know, it's been kind of a neat experience to get in the bigger pond of board gaming outside of just our little group that we did have before. Right. So, because in Dice Masters, it was easy. It was one thing. We talked about the same stuff. And, you know, once you get into the larger world of board gaming, it's definitely a much bigger pond. So it's been interesting to navigate that and, you know, interact with different people. And like you said, I mean, we met at PAX. And did you go to PAX the previous year?
Yes. Yeah, we actually ran a panel at the first PAX Unplugged.
Oh, awesome. So, like, I mean, PAX was a jaunt for us. I mean, we drove overnight. It was about a 9-hour drive. I mean, we're in Northwest Ohio. I loved it. It was a blast. I like Origins more because it's spread out and it only takes me 2 hours to get there. That definitely helps.
I'm going to try Origins this summer. And for me, it's coming from Massachusetts. It's a plane trip. So
oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
kind of the, is this worth it to keep trying?
Right. We decided to split up. And I'm going to Dice Tower Con in July, and she's going to Origins, so we don't have to bring the kids, which saves a lot of money.
I'm going to Origins the week that the kids get out of school.
Yeah. Yeah, this was very poorly planned by me.
and PAX was fun. Like, I really liked it. You know, I think the morning that I met you guys, I was in that press room and just kind of like trying to figure out what my day was going to look like. I was waiting for my friend Randy to come up and kind of see where we were going to go. And saw you guys were playing, what was it? It wasn't Flux.
I think we were playing Get the MacGuffin.
Get the MacGuffin, yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of identify like, oh, here's a group. I mean, you guys look like you were doing same thing we are. It's just playing games with your kids, right? And just looking for those experiences. And I mean, my daughter's 15. And I know you guys have son and daughter. How old is your daughter?
She is 10 going on 21 and, you know, 30 years of sass.
and my daughter can be that too. But, you know, one of the things, like, as she gets older and, you know, I've always had a great relationship with my kids, but like gaming is one of these things that like, I can say, you know, hey, will you sit down and play a game with mom and I? And, you know, it'll get her off social media. It'll get her interacting with us. And then, you know, we're talking about her day or we're talking about other things. And it's like, it's such a good social lubricant for so many different instances. And, you know, we went through as a family and played Charterstone and made like an effort to like, okay, you know, it's Saturday night. Let's get Charterstone out. Or, you know, she loves Wingspan right now. So I can get Wingspan on the table. She whoops us in it. It's not even funny. But you know, that's like, that's the fun, you know, that like, that's the fun part of this to me is like, it's such a, like I can tie memories to gaming.
Yeah. You know, well, sometimes you need to lose to win. So
yeah, absolutely. Right. And you know, and that's a whole nother topic in and of itself, you know,
it is like,
my wife enjoys board gaming. She really does. She would never go to Origins or PAX, or she's been to Origins for half a day and that was too much for her. Mm-hmm. But she'll sit down and play, you know, 99% of the games on my shelf, and I'm okay that she doesn't like, you know, X percentage of them. If she tries a game and doesn't like it, it's fine. Move on. I have 100 other games she likes.
Right.
You know, and it's knowing how and when to introduce a new game to her that I've noticed, like, you know, we recently learned Gentes. Played that, loved it. But I needed that moment when she wasn't tired, wasn't stressed. And yeah. Like, okay, now
those
I can
exist
introduce
for
this.
Moms. I was not aware.
They're magic moments when I was like, oh, here it is. And now we're going to introduce this game. So, but yeah, I mean, that's, I think that's like at its core, that's what our website is trying to do, is like introduce like what's a game you can get to the table, you can play with. You know, when we say game with sidekicks, it's kind of a dual natured thing. The sidekicks are our families, our kids, you know, the people that we, you know, bring alongside of us to game with. But the other aspect and the reason we use the name sidekicks was not knowing what our future is going to look like with Dice Masters, and also acknowledging what our past looked like with that game. I don't know how familiar are with Dice Masters, but the 8 character dice you start with are called sidekick dice.
Oh, okay.
And the logo on the little sidekicks is the little pawn logo. So it's kind of acknowledgement of where we've been and where we're going.
Sure.
That's why we wanted to tie those things together.
Yeah, I didn't really get into Dice Masters because I already had Quarriors and a lot of the expansions for that, and it seemed like pretty close to the same game to me.
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah, so we played around with that a little bit. I think we bought like a Dice Masters starter thing, the DC Dice Masters, for a friend of ours who's a huge DC fan and loves dice. So I think we played it a couple times, but we didn't really get into it super deep.
Yeah, I'm a dice addict. I love a good dice game. Like, that's what drew me in. The superheroes and the dice, like, I mean, that was a win-win.
Right.
That's quite a combo. And honestly, Dice Throne has become something that I can look at and go, okay, I can get a similar experience with this right now.
So sure. That's interesting. I've never heard, I mean, the comparisons that I've heard with Dice Throne are Magic the Gathering and Yahtzee. I've never heard someone, which I think are both accurate because we have the game as well, but I've never heard anybody compare it to Dice Masters.
Well, it's the dice rolling, and definitely more the Yahtzee mechanic, like you said, because Dice Masters is more head-to-head combat, so more Magic-esque, but it's the superhero thematic stuff. It's the back and forth. I take a shot at you, you take a shot at me.
Sure.
And honestly, just that right amount of luck in with the skill that, hey, don't get me wrong, I like to sit down and play Puerto Rico where luck doesn't really matter, but I like a game with like, oh man, I could have had that dice roll, or I could have had that.
Right.
That little bit in there.
Yeah, we have a friend who helps write for our site who despises co-op and luck in games. So that makes things a little bit interesting when he comes over for a game night.
Well, co-op's interesting. Like, I don't know where you guys are with co-op, but...
We're 100% behind it. That's great.
Yeah, playing co-op with kids can be interesting, right? Because it's a very different game the older they get or the younger they are, right? Like, like, how old's your son?
So we have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old.
Oh, okay. Oh, there's 3. I only meant the 2, I believe,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because we leave the 4-year-old at home.
We are quite foolish enough to bring the 4-year-old
nope,
to this.
Nope. Another that's year
fair.
Or two, but...
That's fair. That's smart. I like that. But we had a friend last night I was talking with, and he's a gamer. He's got younger kids, and he mentioned that his 6-year-old that they sat down and played Pandemic with him. And you know what playing Pandemic with a 6-year-old looks like. It's a, I'm telling you how to do this type of thing and guiding them around the board. But like, they're getting that experience. They're kind of seeing what it's like to work together. And,
right.
You know, playing that with my 12-year-old son is a different co-op game. It's no, you're going to kill us, stop, don't do that. You know, so it's a very different co-op experience. I enjoy a good co-op. I like a little bit of tension in them, you know, and that's a big part. Like Legendary is probably my favorite, but again, I'm big nerdy comic book.
That's a superhero thing. Man.
It
if
is.
You wanna,
yeah.
If you want a good co-op with tension, we've been playing Rescue Polar Bears, and we cannot beat that game. So,
yeah.
I have.
It is real hard.
Rescue Polar Bears.
Yeah. It's super cute.
It's very adorable. It has polar bear meeples that are they painted the faces on them, so they're actually looking up at you.
Oh
and,
my gosh, that's perfect.
So you feel like a horrible, horrible human being when you fail them over and over again. it's published by Mayday Games. It was published internationally by somebody else, and Mayday brought it to the States. And
yeah,
it's Rescue Polar Bears, Data and Temperature.
Interesting. So, yeah, I'll have to check that one out.
Yep, we stumbled on that one at PAX Unplugged. Bring it back around.
That's the fun thing too, right? Is finding those little gems like that you're not really sure. Like, well, let's try this. Let's see what happens, right? And sometimes you love them, sometimes the kids love them, and sometimes those things don't match up as well as they should.
Yeah, there's different sets of games that are kind of like, there are games that are in a box behind us that are in the giveaway pile that some our kids might like, but it just not enough for us to be okay with them continuing to like them. But there's many games that are on the kids' shelf. We have a Kallax in the bottom two rows are basically kids' games that we told them, this is your space. You can put whatever games you want in here from the greater collection, and whatever's left over is the stuff that's got to go, right? So we try to give them agency in that, which also kind of goes back to that whole co-op thing. We've always loved using co-op games to teach our kids how to learn logical deduction, right?
And
say,
and
okay,
how to cooperate.
Well, and yes, and how to cooperate, right? So, you know, we'll play Castle Panic with them. Castle Panic is a fantastic example.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll say, okay,
absolutely.
Well, so if I give you this card and you give me this card, next turn, see how this is going to move, and you know it's going to go there, so you're going to have the right. So walking them through that and allowing, see, Anitra and I are both software engineers, so logical progression and the ability to model logical steps in the abstract are kind of critical to what we do for work. And it turns out that skill set is very well suited to board games. And so we use cooperative games to teach those kinds of thought processes to our kids.
Well, it's always interesting, I think, sitting down playing with people of different, careers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we're on different ends of that spectrum. Like I enjoy the logic aspects and the puzzly stuff of board games, but it's not where I first go. You know, I have a friend who's an attorney, who's a big rules guy. Like that's his big stick with stuff is like, you missed this one little thing. Like I tried to tell you all 100 rules and we were learning. Sorry. You know, we'll get back to that. And you know, it is interesting that what we bring to the table, right. And how different. And I think like you said, it not only does it teach those things for the kids, but it helps you to kind of identify like, okay, well, what's my son's strengths? What's his weakness? Where is he, you know, where does he struggle? And for him, he played a lot of the competitive Dice Masters with me, so much the fact that the last time we did Worlds, and we're talking, that was 2017, so 2 years ago, so he would have been 10. He made the top cut for the Worlds competition, took out the guy who was the world champion or the national champion from England who had flown in. And like, I mean, so like this kid was legit with this game, but when he lost, oh man, did he get frustrated. And so we got to talk about winning and losing and what those things look like. And, you know, I had a chance in the year before that I played in the biggest, at the time for the game, it's as big as it got, in world championship, and lost to a guy. I made it to the top two, lost to the guy in rounds from a guy from Spain who had flown in to play this game. I mean, there were a lot of people playing this game internationally. At the time, we had over 100 people playing it in this competition. And, you know, my son was upset for me and he was sad and he was upset that I lost. I'm like, dude, it's okay. It's a game. Right. Right. I had fun. You had fun, you know, and we can be okay with that and teach, you know, what that looks like, because whether it's on a soccer field or it's sitting across from somebody playing a board game, you need to know how to be a good winner and a good loser.
Yep. Yeah. I was actually going to add the good winning part of it. We, our 8-year-old, you know, you talk about identifying strengths and weaknesses. I'm sure it would have come out at some point, but he has a freakish memory. We literally cannot play a memory game with him because he will destroy us. It's not even close.
Yeah, even his 4-year-old brother is just like, I don't want to play this game with him anymore. I only want to play this game if he's not playing.
Right.
That's funny.
Have you played Chicken Cha-Cha-Cha?
I have.
Yeah, he's a force.
That's funny.
That to be reckoned
yes.
with. Yeah.
So
he's to be a card counter.
Well, we're talking about graceful winning here. But yeah, so that, you know, that is an opportunity for us to remind him, because there's a lot of, because he actually struggles a lot with a lot of that logical progression stuff. And so we can point back with him a lot to, do you remember how you felt when we were destroying you at this game? Okay, yeah. And do you remember how mom and dad acted when we were destroying you at this game? And because we don't take it easy on our kids, we're not of the model where we're going to let our kids win. Right.
I'm there with you.
And you know, and that gives us the opportunity to present both sides of that equation and say, well, you remember how you were how you felt in this position, and you know, consider that other people are going to be feeling that same way. These kinds of things. So it's an excellent learning opportunity. That's kind of a lot of what we talked about with our panel a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's important, what you said, not letting kids win or not just giving them the easy, you know, the easy win. I've always been like that with our kids, right? I mean, and that's been the case from all the simple Hasbro games we played early on to where we're at today. And, you know, I think it, like you said, it builds that character and builds that resolve of, you know, good winner, good loser.
I definitely go for the throat less with my kids. Like if I know I'm going to beat them, I don't have to, you know, curb stomp them, but I'll do that with my friends.
It depends on the game, right? Like we were just talking about that. Like I've used gaming, you know, like we said, as this lubricant for so many different things. And I work with some youth at our church and it's always been a good way to kind of get in with teenagers. And sometimes they sit down and we play code names and it's pretty simple and it's light and it's, you know, what it is. And a lot of times when I was early into gaming, I had a group of boys that had known each other since they were very young, that loved sitting down to play Munchkin with way too many players and took hours to play and was just aggressive. I've never played that game that aggressive as I did with that group. And it's interesting how some games veer more towards that, right? Like whether it's a game like Munchkin, whether it's a game like Cash and Guns, right? Or something that like you can play that really lighthearted, or I've seen it played very, you know, very dramatic and aggressively. Mm-hmm. These boys managed to make Colt Express an aggressive game. You know, it's just
wow.
Like it was just like look what I got you, you know, and it's fun to kind of see that, you know, that dynamic of, you know, what different games bring to the table when you have a different group of people. You know, co-op games with them don't go as well. You know, so I don't they
funny
want
how
to
that works.
Yeah, they want to have fun, like beating up on each other and,
right,
you know, and being silly. And I think the only co-op game I got them to like was the League of Legends, the giant League of Legends box.
Mechs versus Minions?
Mechs versus Minions, thank you. Yes.
I'm cheated.
But that one was that's a fun co-op game. I do enjoy that one. It's a programming game. It's co-op. It's a lot of stuff in the box. And I'm not really a League of Legends guy, but, you know, it still was a fun game to play.
Yeah. I mean, what about co-op games with traitors in them?
I mean, I guess it depends on, like, what... Like, I enjoy Dead of Winter. I enjoy the co-op nature of what that is, and I like the idea that there could be a traitor in there. I've played that game teaching it to people with okay, we're just going to get rid of the traitor, there's not going to be a traitor, and I feel like it takes away from that game when you know for certain that everybody's okay. And so I don't mind a little bit of that, potential of traitor in there.
I just didn't know if that might appeal to those guys a little bit more.
I could definitely see it, because then the assumption is that, you know, all of them are awful and evil, and that would just continue to cascade down that line.
I was just thinking that if they manage to turn a game like Colt Express into a really cutthroat kind of game, that they would love Walk the Plank, which has the same sort of action programming idea as Colt Express, except it literally is all about just trying to knock each other off this boat. Be the least incompetent pirate.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
That's perfect. Well, and then you start to, like, you know, you get a sense of, like, what people like, and you start, you know, like, catering to that group, right? Like, I was like, oh, you guys are going to love Sheriff of Nottingham. Like, I think you guys are really going to like how aggressive. And sure enough, that was a hit with them, you know? And like, we can try this one, but you may not like this one as much. And so it's like Kung Fu Zoo is one of my favorite, like, kid family games in a while. And even that one, like, can be a fun, goofy. That was one of my surprise. We talked about, like, games you grab and that surprise you. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to play that one, but I love it. It's
who publishes that? Because I don't even know if I've heard of it.
WizKids.
Okay.
It is a dexterity dice flicking game where you're basically The box is the board, and there's little, like, almost like pool holes in each of the four corners, and you're flicking the dice off the rail, trying to knock other ones into the holes.
Oh, cool.
And each die is an animal. It's got, like, a head, a leg on each side, its back, and the backside is the animal's literal backside. And it's, you know, it's funny and silly. And, you know, I've had adults and kids alike play that and just have like a silly, fun time. Like, Dexterity is not my favorite type of game, but that one's nice and simple because you just put the box on the table and now we can play it. It's not, you know, we got to set up 500 things and move everybody away from the table kind of Dexterity.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've thrown around the names of a couple of different games. Let's do this. Let's talk about your favorite family game from last year, and then we'll talk about a family game that you're looking forward to this year. How's that sound?
Perfect.
All right.
My favorite from last year, we did a series where we did our best of, instead of ranking like our top whatever games, we looked at, you know, at the end of 2018, what were our best ofs? What did we like the most? What did we enjoy as a group of the four of us? We all kind of had to have at least two of the four of us say, yeah, I definitely want to, you know, give this one the stamp of approval. And probably one of my, I think if I check my BG Stats app, it's probably one of my top three, if not even closer to two or one, played games of 2018 was from Origins last year from Cosmos. I just Drop It.
And, fantastic. And
I'm looking at the BG stats. I'm going to look right now to see, but I remember driving to Origins last year, listening to I don't think it was Dice Tower. I want to say it was one of the other podcasts that was doing like an Origins preview, and Rodney Smith was on it. And Rodney said, oh, there's this game coming out from Cosmos. You're like dropping pieces. It's kind of upright. It seems kind of cool. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to look that up real quick. And I looked at it and I was like, oh my gosh, when the hall opens Thursday at 10 a.m., I'm going right to Cosmos and buying this. And Sure enough, they sold out of it, I believe, by Friday morning. And it was the most played thing at Origins. It has that beautiful table presence by being upright.
It's got a fantastic table presence. Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Everyone sees it and everyone's coming around. Oh, let me play it. Let me try it. Let me play this. So I'm looking last year, it was my third most played game with 31 plays of it in, you know, the second half, basically, of 2018.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what it is about it that I think it's the unique bounce. I really attribute the bounce to a part of this because, like, when those pieces fall, they don't just fall. They bounce, they move, they stand on these weird corners and do these stupid things that they shouldn't be able to do.
Yes.
and kids and adults alike do well at this game, right? And that's such a big thing for me that I could sit down with, you know, not just my kids, but even younger kids who could have a chance to win this game. Not because we'd let them, but because the pieces could just fall in the right places for them. And
yeah.
You know, one of the things I was just really blessed to be able to start doing last year is we carved time out of our busy schedule to get my parents to my house once a week for dinner. And my mom and dad, you know, said, hey, we know you love games. You know, what can you show us some of these games? We know you're passionate about this. And so we started getting games at the table that the six of us could play. And maybe the four of us, we'd let them play with the grandkids. And Drop It became one of those like instant successes that, you know, grandma and grandpa enjoyed it. You know, kids enjoy it. And I have never met somebody that played it that went, yeah, no, I don't want to play that again.
Yeah, we picked up Drop It at Unplugged last year. And I mean, pretty quickly became Drop It evangelists.
I mean, first of all, we played it like four or five times before we left Philadelphia.
Right. Yeah. 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 It was, we have played that game. We have played that game so much that I'm starting to see wear in the game, and it's all plastic and wood.
that's so true. Like I pulled it out yesterday. My box is shot. Like I need to tape this thing up. And then the same thing, I noticed that the wood is starting, like it's just gotten enough hands on it. Right.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so we've got to pick a favorite from last year that's not Drop It now.
No.
Good thing you let me go first.
Okay, all right, we're gonna go with the Drop It as well then. I just think that, you know, especially in the context of families, and you know, just you said the same thing. We could sit down with our 4-year-old and play, and And he has a blast playing. Even if he doesn't win, he doesn't even really care all that much. It's just the act of watching them fall and move around and... Yeah.
And sometimes blocking, you know, what you're, what the next person
what
wants
the
to
the next
do.
Person doing. Right. And honestly, like, you're not getting more than 10 points in a given turn. And so even with a four-year-old, they can do the counting of their points pretty much on their own. You know, you keep an eye on them. But all of those things are simple enough for really any age to understand. And it can bring, you know, the flexibility of 2, 3, or 4 players also is really, really, really valuable, because too many games are 2 or 4, or they're too complex because the rules for 3 players are different, or so, you know, some kind of thing like that.
Two players is different.
Yeah, some goofy thing like that.
Right.
And Drop It is just like mega flexible, looks awesome. Yeah, we have Cosmos has sold many copies of that game through through us. So we love that game. We love Drop It.
Yeah, we've been big. Definitely, like you said, big advocates for it, just, you know, pushing. And you know, even just at Origins, you know, we'd have people play it in the evening and we'd all get together and go back, they're all sold out. I'm like, yeah, I assume that would be the case. So
we are not surprised by this thing.
Yeah, I fully expect it'll be a, you know, big seller even again this year for them. I mean, their games are evergreen, right? I mean, their games. I played Ingenious finally for the first time this year. I'd never played it. I didn't realize it was as old as it was. It's still, I mean, it was fun. I really liked it. And I think this will fit for them into one of those, like, yeah, it's going to be around, right? We're going to have it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I agree.
Anitra and I have a long-standing feud about a particular game of Ingenious that we played.
The only time I've played Ingenious.
Yeah.
And he's mad because...
I'm not really mad.
I threw the game to a third player around.
I was going to win the game, and Anitra decided that she would be the... She says that she would be the agent of chaos and you know, did something that didn't help her at all, but threw the game to the other player.
I was in last place and not getting out.
Yeah, she didn't.
Last place.
She didn't
so
care.
I was just looking for something.
And so, it was either, you know, let her husband win or make it so that not her husband won. And she made it so not her husband won.
Oh man, I've definitely been guilty
and
of that.
And you're
going to
be
in
bitter
in
about
past.
That for a year.
I'm not really bitter. It's just you said Ingenious, and it makes me laugh. That's really all it is. I will say we picked up a game last year that I don't think it was new last year, but it's a fantastic family game. It is a co-op, however, and that's Ghost Fight and Treasure Hunters. And that was right up there with Drop It as games that we played a ton with the family.
Yeah, well, I was actually just looking back, and in 2018, our most played game was Drop It. Our second most played game was Ghost Fight and Treasure Hunters, which we didn't get till September of that year.
Well, we didn't get Drop It until December of that year.
Yeah, and it still made the top. That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. So for both of you, Drop It, that's the...
I think so. Yeah, I mean, sure. our tastes when it comes to stuff that will appeal at that family level don't differ a ton. Yeah, I mean, let me give you an example. One of my favorite games of all time is Role Player. One of her favorite games of all time is Sagrada. Right,
fair
they're different, but they're not that different.
No, it's fair.
So
the theme execution.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I honestly like. I know I mentioned this a few minutes ago, but are you like, if you had a chance to play the Grandpa Beck family games, any of that line, like Skull King and Cover Your Assets?
I saw Cover Your Assets. I didn't, based on the presentation on the box, I didn't know if that's a family game or not. I just wasn't sure how coarse the jokes would be. And I know there's another game coming out that I think it's like a fantasy spin
it's
on
Cover Your Kingdom.
Yeah.
Yeah. More, it's supposed to be more kid related. And honestly, like Cover Your Assets is not, there's nothing coarse in it. And then the title is the worst of it.
Okay. But it doesn't actually really bother me at all, but you know, when I throw stuff out there, I just have to be hyper careful. So
no, totally understand the cover or the name is probably the only aspect with that one. Both of those games, I tell you that was a company that I think kind of came out of left field here recently. They've been around for a while, but I do not care for trick taking games at all. It's not, I have no interest in playing most of them. Friends sit around and say, let's play Diamonds, and I'm not interested. Never liked Hearts or Spades or Euchre or any of that. But right. Skull King, there's something about that game when you sit down with a wide variety of ages of people that it is a blast to play. And I've been so impressed with just what type of game that brings to the table, and how many people, when we're done, are literally buying it on Amazon, like, as we're playing.
Right.
And that says a lot to me about a game, right? Drop It has had that effect, where I've seen people buy it. And that one's definitely probably my, you know, 1B pick from this last year that I just really, really enjoyed.
So what about this year? So I'm going to go first so I don't get my pick taken away. And this is a game that is already out and has stirred some controversy online.
Uh-oh.
You know what it is. Uh-oh. I'm sure you probably know by now, but I love the heck out of Tiny Towns.
Yeah, you do.
I love that game so much. It's another one of these games that even our four-year-old can play, and especially, you know,
not well, but he did.
So we talked about Pyramids of Penguin. Our review is coming out for that on Monday. We talked about that, I think, before we started recording. And that's a game that he likes to play, but we can't play with him because everybody's actions are so intertwined that him being the agent of chaos in that game kind of ruins it for the other kids. That's not the case in Tiny Towns.
Right.
I mean, maybe a tiny bit because of whatever cube he picks.
But that's literally all.
But everybody has their own player board. Right. Everybody has their own player board. Everybody can do their own thing. He loves building buildings. We're all playing with deep strategy. It's a game that scales from 1 to 6 players extremely well. It scales from 4 to 100 years old really, really well. It's incredibly simple. I just love it. Have you had a chance to try it out at all?
I haven't. I'm hoping to at Origins. How similar is it to... Have you played Baron Park?
It's nothing like Baron Park. There's no tile laying at all. We have Baron Park.
So it's not that type of game?
Nope. Okay. So you have a 4x4, 5x5 grid, and you are placing colored cubes on the grid. So there's a roll called the Master Builder roll, and that circulates around the table. Okay. And you pick a cube color. And everybody has to take one of that cube color and put it in one of the squares of their grid. And there's a set of buildings that are laid out that have like cube orientations. It'll be like a blue one, and it's like a, you know, an L formation. There's a blue one in the corner and a red one on one end and a yellow one on the other end. And so if you put cubes in that orientation on your board, you can then remove them and put the building that you've now represented. And all the different buildings score differently and relate to each other. And the goal of the game is by the end to have the highest scoring town. And that's basically it. There's no tiles. There's no tile laying. People have compared it to New York 1901, and I don't even understand the comparison at all. Like, I don't get it. You know, we have that game as well. I don't understand
that. I think I understand where the comparison comes in, but it feels like a lot of other games out there. But it really stands on its own as well, because I can't think of another game where you're sort of doing this sort of layout and then collapsing everything together to build your building. And that really becomes a major, major part of the strategy, because all of a sudden you're working on one building and then you're working on another building and you're running out of room.
It feels like you have all this available resource, whether that resource is free space or whatever, but it's just suddenly gone. So the feeling that I have with Tiny Towns is exactly the same feeling I had the first time I played Drop It, which was, this game is so simple, how did this game not already exist? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And that's exactly how I felt playing Tiny Towns. I was like, this is so simple. Like, this is, okay, everything you said makes sense. It took you literally 2 minutes to explain the game to me. And when I played it at Unplugged, with the designer running the game, I was sitting next to an 8-year-old playing the game, learning it for the first time, and they didn't need to ask for a bunch of extra rule clarifications. It's that simple.
Yeah, that's so important. That's how I learned Drop It, was with a random kid at Origins, you know, who beat me soundly. Yeah, that's such a big part of that. It's definitely on my... I don't see buying a lot of games at Origins. I come home with enough other stuff to take care of. But, but that's one, if I don't if I can't get a copy of it, there is definitely before there, I should say, is definitely high on my list to check out and get a hold of. So I've seen nothing but love for it so far.
Yeah, definitely. We love it a lot. Now you can't pick it as your game that you're looking forward to.
is that for both of you?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not as overwhelmingly excited about it as Andrew, but it is a really good game, and I see it getting a lot of play around our house.
Fair enough.
Four players?
Up to six,
actually.
Up to six? Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And technically, you could play with more people if you wanted to. You know, it's one of these games where if you have enough materials, you could play with 100 people. You know what I mean? And it's also one of these games where this is a game that would play really well across the internet. So like if you...
In fact, they've... As part of the
there's a promotional thing about that.
People who are like, "Hey, we're playing this game. If you have a copy, or if you want to kind of draw your own copy, right. you can play along.
You can play along, right? So if you and whoever you wanted to play with, like let's say you weren't close to your parents and they wanted to play a game with you on like Skype video or something, you could literally play Tiny Towns and just agree on the set of buildings that you both have available to you and just and play the game. And it would totally work. There's no reason why it wouldn't.
That's cool.
Which is really, really
neat. It's got that welcome to type of opportunity.
Yeah, it's not like a roll and write or anything like that, but it has a lot of the same, I guess, elements to it as a game like that does. It's your own
DNA,
your own player board that you're designing and building out on your own. So, yeah.
Nice.
You're never competing for resources with somebody else.
So tonight or tomorrow, Anitra and I are going to sit down and go through the list of Origins games and figure out what she's going to be checking out.
What else I should get excited about.
Origins is always tough with that because there's not really... I mean, nobody really has like tons of new stuff. This will be my... Let me see, it's my seventh Origins I've been to, I think. Mm-hmm. And the only company that really seems to make a big deal of new releases and they own it at Origins is Plan B, you know, because this will be the third year for them with the new Century game, and they had Coimbra last year. They had like 200 copies of that, and that I think they're the main ones that say, "Hey, check out all of our new stuff. We'll have it pre Gen Con. We'll have it here," which is kind of like being the biggest fish in the small pond.
But
honestly, they were the only place last year that had a line that like security had to come like manage it because it was it was ridiculous. The other place that could have had it but only had so many copies was Deepwater, because they had Welcome Too, but they had 50 copies a day,
right?
And those were gone by the time reviewers were through there. You know, those were gone very quickly, bought up. So
yeah,
but yeah, that'll be interesting to see what all Origins brings to the table.
Yeah, for us, Origins is the first con of the year, really. So anything that's happened in the first half of the year is, you know, hits us for Origins. So
that's perfect. Oh, let's see, 2019. So, and obviously my, as we talked about, I don't have a 4-year-old at home and don't have an 8-year-old. So sometimes the games I look forward to are a little higher up
Well, that's okay. I mean, you know, level, you can have adults in your family too.
There's one that I've played that I'm looking forward to, and there's one that I haven't, that I should be getting any time now that I'm interested to see the dynamic. So the one that I played that I cannot wait to get a hold of is a Kickstarter. Got a chance to play it with the designer at PAX. Wasn't sure when I backed it, but jumped on the hype train and jumped into the fact that the art was amazing, and I trusted the fact that James Hudson was putting it down.
Tidal Blades.
And that was Tidal Blades.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you guys had a chance to play it there at PAX, but I sat down, myself and Randy sat down with another guy that we knew named Matt, and one other person we didn't know, and Tim Eisner comes walking over and says, "All right, I'm going to teach you how to play this game," and we played 3 of the 5 rounds of it, played for about an hour, and it was so good. I did not expect it to be as good as it was. And that's not a shot at the game. I didn't know, you know, and when we sat down and played through the story, and we played through, you can go over here and you can do this, and you can make this move to make this fire off, and the dice rolling, like it just, you could smell the theme in it. You could see like what they were trying to go after. And I really liked him. I've had a chance to talk with him, for about a few different games. He had a game called, Dungeon Hustle that WizKids put out that kind of was one of his first games. This was pre
the Grim Forest.
Yes, pre Grim Forest. He did it with his brother, and it was simple, it was silly, but it was a fun little dungeon crawl. And you know, it was neat sitting down with him. I introduced myself. I'm like, "Hey, you into the site game?" "Oh yeah, yeah, Isaac. Yeah, you did review on one of my games, right?" I'm like, "Oh, actually, I did. That's pretty cool."
And you remembered. Just, that's amazing.
That's awesome. I did like it. I'd like to make that point. But it was a fun game, and I really think my family is going to really enjoy getting into the theme of this. They may not be interested in an RPG of this. I know that's one of the angles they're taking it. But the fact that they're creating this story in this world, and the art is just absolutely amazing in this thing. And
yeah, that's when I'm pretty definitely stoked about that too.
I just can't wait to get it in front of me. It's definitely high on my list. The other game that is definitely one I want to get a hold of and try out. Randy on my team, he's a big kaiju guy. He loves Godzilla. He loves all the different kaiju games. And WizKids has a game coming out this summer called Smash City. And it's a kaiju combat game. There's dice. It's fighting. It's not King of Tokyo. As I've looked through it, the dice are like bigger, heavier dice that you can use to like, you set up like 3D cardboard little cities and buildings. So you're trying to crush certain cities and knock down a building, or if you hit within the range of the other person's character, you attack them. You can pick up a car and throw it at another kaiju. And, So there's a little bit of dexterity, definitely some fighting, and you know, and again, it's got that little bit of dice roll that I just really like.
Sure.
WizKids puts out 700 games a year, and
that way, doesn't it?
They put out so many games, and I think you know you have to look, but there are some real good ones in there that I think kind of like miss getting the attention they deserve. Bumantu is one that came out here just really recently that I really like. The Kung Fu Zoo one that we talked about, and I think the Smash City, especially from the theme alone, has some potential to be a hot game.
Cool. I know nothing about that game, but now I'm kind of interested in checking it out. So
that might be, there you go. Add it to your list there for Origins.
I will do that.
So will you be attending all of Origins? Is that the plan?
That's the plan.
It's my favorite con of all the ones I've been to, because it's that big little con. Like there's a lot going on. There are a lot of people there and a lot of industry people there, but it doesn't feel like crazy crowded. Like PAX at certain times just felt crazy crowded. And and the Origins never really has that feel to it. I think it helps it spread out over 5 days. That makes a big difference as well.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But no, it should be exciting. Should be a good time. They don't have a nice press room there, so.
Well, I was getting the emails, and basically they have a press room, but you have to schedule it ahead of time to be like, I need this room so I can do an interview in the quiet.
Yeah, I usually just skip it. I take the mic out on the floor and we just deal with background noise.
I actually like the background noise. I actually kind of, you know, it gives you the sense of like, hey, this is a live interview, right? I actually prefer
it. We're actually here.
Yep, that hustle and bustle.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and kind of talking about games from this past year and this year and what you do over at Gaming with Psychics.
Perfect. Well, thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun. If we get back into our podcast, we'll have to do the same here.
Sounds awesome. Where can people go and find more of your stuff? You said you do a lot of written stuff, so where
sure
can they find
it? Our main site is just gamingwithsidekicks.com, and we're also fairly active over on Instagram and Facebook. Have a Twitter and YouTube account also, all listed under Gaming with Sidekicks. So you can find any information on us. We also try to stay active. At least I personally try to stay active, as you do as well, in a number of different Facebook groups. And I feel like that just mm-hmm. kind of helps to, you know, make sure you're part of that community and mm-hmm. and seeing all what's all going on. You know, it's fun to be a part of some of the discussions, and some of them you just leave them alone. And
I need to do that more.
it's very interesting, right? Like, community is a fun thing to be a part of. And I've got in Northwest Ohio here where we're at, we've got a good group, and it's even inspired me to take on trying to design a game myself. We've got a good little Northwest Ohio Designers Guild that I need to start showing up to, because it's got John Gilmore and Ian Moss, and you know, these guys are like in my backyard, so I probably could go get
take
some
advantage
tips from
of
them. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Well, thanks for having me on. I had a good time.
Hey, Andrew, where can you find us online?
Oh, well, there's lots of places that you can find us online. My favorite is social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FamilyGamersAA. You can also head over to our community. You can go to thefamilygamers.com/community. That'll bring you right to our community page where you can join the community. You can share pictures of your family playing games, get some recommendations from some of the folks that have joined that as well. There's lots of stuff going on in there pretty much every day, so it's pretty awesome. You can also email us if you have any questions for us. I am Andrew at thefamilygamers.com.
anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please do not forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Whatever your podcast subscription source is, we're also on TuneIn, we're on Stitcher, we're on Spotify.
You name it, we're there.
Yep. You can also head over to our Pod Pledge page. This is a place that allows you to become part of the Family Gamers family. At different levels, you can get birthday cards from us, Christmas cards from us. Last year's Christmas card had a picture of all of us on it, saying thank you so much for yeah. being part of the Family Gamers family. It's a lot of fun. You can see our goofy family in a video.
You can see both of our boys just being
young boys. Yep, that's what they do. Also, we have a sponsorship opportunity going on right now with Audible. Head over to thefamilygamers.com/Audible. It is the summer, and you can get 2 free audiobooks by going to thefamilygamers.com/Audible and signing up for a free trial. It's like a 30-day. You can download 2 books for free, cost you nothing, and check out the service. It's pretty great, actually. I like it a lot.
I think it's great for all those summer road trips because our kids are always like, I just want to play on my DS. And we're like, how about we all listen to a book together?
Yeah, it's almost like being able to zone out and have some peace and quiet while there's a book happening. And I don't feel guilty for having my children playing video games. It's great. It's pretty much the perfect thing for a car trip.
Yeah, I agree.
So head over to thefamilygamers.com/audible to check that out. So I think that's going to be it for us this week. Thanks again, Isaac, Gaming with Sidekicks, for coming on the show. I think it was an awesome, awesome time talking about all sorts of cool gaming stuff. So, until next week, everybody, play games with your kids.